As those of you who know me know that I generally have an outline of what I'm going to do. And so here are some copies if you are so inclined. There might be extras. I never know how many to run off. As I was sitting at the breakfast table this morning, my wife said, "Well, how are you going to start out?" And I said, "Well, you know, I usually try to think of a song." And I said, "So?" She said, "Well," I said, "this is a true story. I was in first grade, Irving grade school, Marion, Iowa. First grade and fifth grade, there was a bully named Buddy Nelson. And Buddy would often hide behind the bushes near his home as I had to walk by there to get home after school. And so about that time I learned a song that goes like this. "Whenever I feel afraid, I hold my head erect and whistle a happy tune so no one will suspect I'm afraid." And Janice, my wife, asked, "Well, how did it work?" And I said, It didn't, because I don't know how to whistle. And she said, "How about now?" And I said, "I still have trouble whistling." And she said, "Well, there's an app for that." And I said, "Well, thanks a lot." So that song was not particularly effective in my life. But at that age, you know, courage was simply going against fear. And that's certainly part of it. Because fear is necessary for courage. Without doubt, there's no faith. Without discouragement, there's no hope. And without fear, there's no courage. There's just recklessness. So that fear is really a necessary reality in dealing with courage, but it didn't seem to me like it was sufficient, because I think of people like Evel Knievel and Houdini, who are certainly going against fear, but it didn't seem enough to really call them courageous, because it seemed like there was some selfishness in it. There's that part of becoming famous or making some bucks. And the courage that I admire in people is a courage that is selfless. And so I jotted down three preconditions, for me anyway, for courage. And these are in people like the teachers at Sandy Hook, or Martin Luther King, or the firefighters and police at 9/11. You know, these people seem to me to be courageous people. And the first thing about them, it seemed that they're hopeful. The first thought that came to me when I was asked to talk on courage was the quote from St. Augustine, who said, "Hope has two daughters, both of them are lovely, anger and courage." Now, in my tradition, this is often quoted because of the daughter, anger. Since in my moral tradition, anger's got a bad rap. It's one of the seven capital sins, but on the other hand, it is precisely the energy you need to deal with the injustices in society. And so the daughter that's usually spoken of in my moral training is anger, but another daughter is courage. And it comes from being hopeful. So a person, if one wants to be courageous, one needs to nurture a sense of hope. And that is tied up with a couple of songs that have dream in them. You know, Martin Luther King was motivated to be courageous because he had a dream. A dream implies hope. The two songs that give me energy at times is The Impossible Dream and Climb Every Mountain, Ford Every Stream, da-da-da-da-da, till you find your dream. So one, to be courageous, needs to be hopeful, which is often tied up with a dream. And I heard the introduction next week about dealing with justice, injustice. One to deal with injustice needs to have a dream that things can be better. And I found this quote, interestingly enough, from Napoleon. Courage is like love. It must have hope for nourishment. Courage is like love. It must have hope for nourishment. So it seems to me, to become a courageous person, you first of all need to be hopeful. And then the second thing I put down, you have to have a purpose. Probably almost, and maybe 50 years ago, as a young man, I read Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. I haven't looked at the book probably for 50 years, but I'll never forget the theme of that. You know, his experience in prison camp was the people that had a purpose, you know. Once they get out of here, they have a family or whatever. Those who had a purpose survived the atrocities of prison camp, and those who did not have one did not make it. Another way of putting it is, if you have a why, you can make it through almost any how. But if you don't have a why, the hows become overwhelming. So the second thing about courage, it seems to me, is that you have to have a purpose. One of my heroines is Jean Donovan. Jean Donovan was one of the four churchwomen that went to El Salvador in 1984 and was martyred. And before she went back there, her fiancé and both of her parents were putting pressure on her not to go. She said, it's too dangerous. Aren't you afraid? And Jean's response was, of course I am afraid. Of course I am afraid. But when I see the face of the children, I must go back. I mean, that's a clear sign of purpose. When I see the face of those children, I must go back. And the third thing I put is to be ready, which means to live in the present moment. I doubt if any of those teachers at Sandy Hook in Newtown, Connecticut, woke up that morning and said, I'm going to be courageous today. But they were in the present moment of the situation. And in the present moment, probably without much thinking, they instantly put themselves in front of those kids. And so they were very courageous. They were hopeful. You know, a teacher has to be hopeful or you don't show up. You've never taught, you know what that means. You have to be hopeful. You have to have a purpose. These kids are worth it. And you have to be in the moment. I remember one of my first experiences of teaching. I was practice teaching in eighth grade at Nativity School. And I had this wonderful class planned on confirmation. I thought, this is going to blow the socks off these eighth graders. You know. So just as I prepared to go into the classroom, we got the word that John F. Kennedy had been killed, shot. And I looked at my teacher and I said, what am I going to do? And she said, well, you could teach your lesson on confirmation, or you could deal with the reality that the president had just been shot. And I could only go to the second one. I had to be in the present moment. And a teacher does that all the time. when we hear about stories, and I hear about them almost weekly on television, like the person who is driving down the road, he notices a car on fire, stops his car, runs out, pulls somebody out of the burning car, or there's a car that fell on somebody, and a group of people run and lift up the car off this person, and they interview these people, and they generally say, you know, I'm no hero. I just did what needed to be done. But what they did do was live in the present moment and look at the situation and respond to it. And as I wrote those three things down, to be hopeful, to have purpose, to be ready, or to live in the present moment, they're really the qualities of a spiritual person. If you choose to be a spiritual person, and I suspect that's your choice, or you would probably be in bed yet. Those are the qualities of a spiritual person. Without going to the big hero kinds of things, there's the courage of daily life. Courage doesn't always roar. Sometimes courage is a little voice at the end of the day that says, I'll try again tomorrow. And I think that's the courage. That's really the kind of courage I heard in people who came up and put these shells in here. They either were speaking courageously themselves or about another person who's courageous. And they were dealing with the stuff that happens in life. And so it's not going to be in the newspapers. Many of us won't think about it again the rest of the week. But it's that courage of dealing with life. I remember my cousin Janet and I met in St. Louis for a cup of coffee. We were in our 50s. And sometimes you have conversations you never forget. And sometimes you have conversations and they're over with and you forget about insulin. For some reason, I always remember that conversation with Janet because the substance of it in our mid-50s was life is a lot tougher than we thought back in Marion, Iowa. I mean, we were on the playgrounds of the school and we never thought it would be so tough. And it reminds me of the first line of Scott Peck's book, The Road Less Traveled. Life is difficult. Life is difficult. So if you've made it to your 50s, and I notice some of you have, you are a courageous person because you're still here. You know, you've had to deal with tough stuff. And I don't know your stories, but I know they're filled with courage because stuff happens. The other thing I wanted to speak about is teaching courage. One of my retirement things I do is I tutor first graders. And last year I was tutoring in first grade with a substitute teacher. And the first graders were supposed to, in response to some story or something, they're supposed to write two sentences. So she said, can you go around and check if they've written those two sentences, you know, put a sticker on their paper, wow, great job, smiley face. I had this whole group of stickers. And I started putting them on and I noticed, geez, the spelling is terrible. There's no punctuation. I go over to the teacher and says, you know, should I help these kids with their spelling or punctuation? She said, no, no, if they've done the assignment, just give them a sticky face. Okay, I'll do that. But I felt compromised. And maybe it's because I was, in the 70s, I was a high school teacher and principal, and I didn't pass on many smiley faces. In fact, to this very day, I carry a red pen. My wife knows that I always have two pens in my pocket. One dark and one red. And And even when I carried a red band back in those days, I did have compassion. It's gone now, but I did have compassion, but I couldn't. You know, maybe someplace between first grade and high school, people are taught, you know, that doesn't really deserve a smiley face. You could do better here. And while I was thinking of that, one day I read this article by John Rosenbaum that said, "Strive for courage over self-confidence." In the article he says, "Besides, I would propose that courage, not self-confidence, is what parents should attempt to help their children develop. The research strongly suggests that self-confident people either are A, hesitant to take on challenges unless they believe they're going to succeed, or B, so sure of succeeding that they foolishly expose themselves and others to high-risk situations. Courage, on the other hand, is a willingness to take on a task even if one knows he or she may not succeed. It is the willingness to fight the good fight even when the odds are stacked against you. These are the people who make great sacrifices for noble causes," think Martin Luther King Jr. This is strictly anecdotal, but I was talking to a college professor who has been in the business for a long number of years, and I asked her, do you know anything different between the students now and 20 or 30 years ago? And she said, "Oh yeah, they don't want to work and they give up easily." And I said, "Is that right?" "Oh yeah, they give up." And I said, well, that's interesting. That's anecdotal, but it's kind of what I was thinking. And then I remember reading, and I can't give you the source of this. It was someone who was visiting in American high schools and Asian high schools. And he noticed that when there was a tough math problem, the teacher would invite the brightest student to come up and do it on the board. And the bright student, he or she, would do this on the board. In the Asian school, the teacher would invite up a very poor student to come up. And this poor student would struggle, and the class would give hints, and the teacher would encourage. And finally, after this poor student solved the problem on the board, everybody cheered. Everybody cheered. And its purpose was, you know, when you got tough stuff, can we develop courage in people and give them the support that's needed and the empathy to do it? I found those times of kind of interesting. The one that I deal most with is courage at midlife. As a spiritual director, a lot of people are in midlife, and I think they're going through what Joseph Campbell says: we must be willing to get rid of the life we've planned, so as to have the life that is waiting for us, and that's really tough. I went through it myself. Took me 7 years from, I think I need to leave the priesthood, to leaving. It took me 7 years, so I'm very patient with people. I know how it is. The image that I have for myself is to make those changes is like walking on water. You know, you have to keep your eye on the goal or you're going to sink. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of courage. And so for those who are Christian that I direct, I give them the story of Peter walking across the water. As long as he kept his eye on the goal, he was okay. But when he started, "Whoops, I'm walking on water," he sunk. So just a couple of examples. I have a sister-in-law who very good in computers, doing very well, has a high-paying job. She decided, you know, this is where my heart is. So she went back, she's back going to school to become a social worker. She loves it. She said, I've got cases now that I'm, she's training. She's going to make far less money. But she said, no, this is the life I want. Or a guy in my men's group who, graphic designer, good job, pays well. He just applied to go to school to become a counselor. He's late 40s, I think. I have listened to all kinds of people in relationships, and you know, should I end this? Should I go on? So there's a lot of things that happen when you realize you got more yesterdays than tomorrows. When you get to that point, you say, "Whoops!" You don't say, "I didn't say I'm 53, then 53 and a half." Like little kids do. No one ever says, well, I'm 53 and a half. I've heard kids say I'm 7 and a half. But you say, you know, and you start to say, well, maybe I got 20 good years left or 30 good years left. And you say, oh, whoops, I got to start looking at this differently. And so there's a lot of courage in midlife that's called for. Finally, I'll conclude by, well, Hope has two daughters, both of them lovely. One of them is Courage. Courage has a sister called Love. And to be loved deeply by someone gives you courage, and to love someone deeply gives them courage. So there is this relationship, like all virtues, actually. All virtues are really some kind of form of love. So that would be a sister. I don't think I'm going to look. I don't know how to use an app. I don't think I'll be able to whistle even in my last years. But I do feel afraid. And so these are some of my reflections on that experience. Open it up for comments or questions.
Response.
Yes.
I don't know if that's where you were listening yesterday on National Public Radio. They had the guy reporting from the Carnegie Heroes Fund.
No, I didn't hear that.
It was really interesting. He said exactly what you said. That
this bright. Guy, he's very bright.
He expenses a $5,000 prize and a medal to citizens for an act of courage and bravery. And what he says is almost every time, when they try and ask them, this was on Radiolab, and scientists are trying to figure out where goodness comes from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they said every time, the people just said, well, I just had to do it. They didn't think it at all.
Yeah.
They were in the moment, and they just reacted.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I had to do it.
Well, in the middle school class, I'm teaching them, we have a unit on courageous people because we were talking about the prophets in the Bible. Mm-hmm. So then I took a section out. And when you're talking about these people, I think of Raoul Wallenberg. I mean, he didn't know what was coming in his life or anything, but just moved forward and was so brave. And now they're learning today about Aung San Suu Kyi. I mean, imagine how many years she was there, and she was able to just stick it out because she knew, I guess she fit the profile, and you just have to admire these people, and I think it's one way to teach it is to show children people of courage.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, there are a lot of, I mean, if we know some of the, it's stories that inspire us. You know, it's not some philosophical discussion of courage. And yeah, we need to teach those stories. Yes?
I wonder if you would consider a fourth precondition.
Oh, sure.
To be concerned with others.
Yes.
Because it seems to me like courageous people can be quite selfless. If it's in the moment or whenever it is, all the ones you mentioned, Carnegie Heroes, you know, they have something there which puts down their ego and turns them toward others.
Exactly.
And so it seems to me like, you know, it's got to be a very social kind of a drive, instinct, whatever you want to call it, to be courageous, you must be other directed.
Exactly, yeah, that's a good point. I certainly support that, yeah.
Stay one more moment. And I want Bob and Ted and Ben and Isaac and Jesse to help us with this question.
Okay.
The role of music in the spiritual journey.
Uh-huh.
So I know it's important to many, many people in this group. The role of, and you mention this music all the time.
Oh, yeah.
What's the role of music in the spiritual journey?
Well, to me, it's a source of energy. I mean, there's energy in music that, you know, and there's also energy in poetry. That's what it is to me. Others could comment.
Yeah. What about you other folks? The role of music in the...
Music holds you up. At least for me, that's what it is. It holds me up.
Mm-hmm.
And music is spoken by everybody. There's not a language that's specific. There's not a certain part of the world. Everyone speaks the language of music. Something that seems to go beyond any way that we may communicate with another person or find a way that is too difficult to communicate with others. You can always communicate by the love or experience that music brings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, thanks so much. Just go ahead.
It's a source of, let's see, not only inspiration, but reflection. Music gives me an opportunity to reflect.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Okay.